It's because they're passionate, they show promise, they believe in what they are doing, they know when to lead, they know when to follow, and they know when to get the hell out of the way.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to Inspired Leadership. My name is Tyler Bailey. I'm here with Susan Power. And before we get started, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to invest in yourself, to drink the Kool-Aid of being a better leader, to learn from thought leaders from around the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Let me introduce our guest for today. We have Farah Muhammad. She brings more than 25 years of experience creating and leading national and international organizations. She is currently the CEO of the Prince's Trust Canada, which is King Charles III's trust to invest in equity-deserving youth and veterans to help secure meaningful employment through training and mentorship. See, prior to this, Farah was CEO of the Malala Fund, where she led global efforts to further Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai's mission to educate millions of girls around the world. She also founded Fora, previously called Girls 20, to cultivate a new generation of leaders by empowering girls and women through education, entrepreneurship, and global experiences. All right, let's hop in with Farah Muhammad.
On today's episode of the Inspired Leadership Podcast, we have Farah Muhammad. Welcome to Inspired Leadership.
Thanks, Susan. I'm really thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Mm-hmm. And to start, Farah, can you tell us a little bit about your story and what is the why behind what you do?
Well, so first of all, Susan, Tyler, I am going to be as succinct as I possibly can, but I'm 53, so indulge me for a couple of minutes. So I was actually born in Uganda, in Kampala. I was 2 when I came to Canada as a refugee, and I think that's really defined a lot of who I am. So if you think about what I'm obsessed by youth and opportunities. I'm obsessed by, you know, being the best version of yourself in any way, shape, or form. I'm obsessed by community and building it and being part of it. And the other part I'm obsessed with is, you know, trying to figure out, as a Canadian citizen, as somebody who was brought to this country, not born in this country, what is my obligation? What is my opportunity? What is my commitment to this country? Because I feel like I've lived in a place of pay it back. And so that's a little bit about me. I've got a degree in political science. I've got 2 of them and one that they just gave me because I'm an honorary doctorate. I spent some time in Ottawa in politics. I went on from there and went straight into the social profit world and I've never looked back.
I've always heard that. People just are honorary doctorate.
You actually have to work for it, Tyler. You have to work for it. So you don't go to school for it. I don't sit in the classroom for it. But there are these things called honorary doctorates. And they're bequeathed on you from a board of governors who decides that your community and your contribution to Canada or your country or your community or your whatever has been significant enough that they would like to give you an honorary doctorate. In my case, it's an honorary doctorate of laws. I don't have people call me Dr. Muhammad. And lots of my friends laughed at me and said, you should have earned that degree, Farah. But I was very proud to stand there at Western University and receive that degree. I'll just round that off. I spent 10 years in politics, went on to the social profit world. I lived in London for the UK for, not Ontario, London, the UK for 2 years while I was working with Malala. And I've come back to Toronto and I think this is where it's at.
Can you say a little bit about your current gig, what your role
is? Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah. So about a year ago, I joined as the CEO of the Prince's Trust Canada, and PTC, as we call it, is the King, His Majesty the King's flagship charity here in Canada. We focus on young people, and we focus very much on what you're talking about, which is leadership, teaching them skills and building networks and taking opportunities and getting job experience. We also do this with veterans. And so we're very much about taking the individual and providing opportunity in the way of investment in terms of skills attainment and then experience in relation to either building your own business or working in a role that is really reflects your passion, reflects your curiosity, and reflects your skills. So that's what we do. We provide young people with opportunities for learning, for employment, for entrepreneurship, and for engagement. I think that's the secret sauce. It's not one of those things. It's many of those things that are brought together.
What does inspired leadership mean to you?
Inspired leadership to me, and this may not be the norm, but it starts from a point of passion. Passion for people. It's not a product, but it's doing something that leads to something. Just to be inspired, I need to see that there is some level of passion for what that person's doing. I need to understand that that is about something bigger than themselves, that there's a path that may be unconventional, and that actually is really cool. I can be inspired and led by an 18-year-old who doesn't have any of that. It's because they're passionate, they show promise, they believe in what they are doing, they know when to lead, they know when to follow, and they know when to get the hell out of the way. And that, to me, is inspired leadership. You care about something, you bring other people along, you pave the way, and then you let other people take the lead.
Think about the concept of leadership. You kind of started down that path with your previous answer that, you know, an 18-year-old can be a leader. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that in terms of trends on leadership development and even how leadership has evolved over the years?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to someone who is surrounded by young people, both in terms of the people that we serve and the people who are working here at Princess Trust Canada. So the majority of my team are young, right? Some of them are first time they've had a job. Some of them have been in the labor force for 5 years, and some of them have been here for, I mean, not here, but have been in the labor force for 15, 20 years. And what I find, I guess, is the mix of the all, that's where the magic happens, right? So you have some people who are learning for the first time and some people have been here forever. And when they start to communicate and they start to connect and they start to come up with solutions, I think that's where you're seeing leadership play out. So you have young people who didn't really have years of experience, but they innately know, because they're the people that we're serving, by the way, what young people need. So shame on us if we don't stop it, right? So we're being led by people that we are serving. They may not be equity deserving. They may not be neat, but they're in that catchment where they see it, they experience it, they may be it. Innately, they know what makes an 18 to a 24 to a 30-year-old tick. So we're being led by the people that we want to.
Can you please tell us a little about your experience working with Malala Yousafzai?
Sure, I would love to. So I joined Malala when she was on her way into Oxford. So she had graduated from high school and was going to Oxford. And so you can imagine, for a leader who's known the world over to be going through this transformation, my experience with Malala was equal parts exhilarating, equal parts stressful, a real check on humility. I got to sit with Malala in boardrooms, but the most important rooms that I was in was rooms that had no walls, where we were in Iraq, sitting with girls on a floor, having them talk to us about how they escaped child marriage to go to school. I saw something that I feel like I will never see again, which was this young woman who knew what her mission was and was using every lever possible, every relationship, every moment, every funder, every conversation to try to move the bar on girls' education everywhere in the world. And I don't think I'll ever, ever experience something like that. And I get emotional about it because if I hadn't come to Canada as a refugee when I was 2, I probably wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation with the two of you. But to even have a glimpse of that, even be a small part of that journey, will be forever something that I hold on to and taught me lots of lessons. And when I talk about learning from a young person, I learned patience from that woman. Mm-hmm. I learned being humble. I learned how to listen better. And I learned how to act and then not act.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the challenges that you faced during your time as a refugee, both in Uganda and when you came to, what was it, Canada initially that you came to, you said, as a 2-year-old?
I'm one of the lucky ones who came, and I came with 2 parents and a sister, and I don't remember anything. And I'm pointing that out because trauma, like that which refugees face, can impact their leadership. It can impact who they are, how they feel about themselves, their sense of worth. And so I think it's really remarkable that I don't have any recollection of that journey. What I do know is what I grew up with, the stories about leaving Uganda, the stories about running away in the middle of the night, only taking that which you could. The fact that my parents came here, both well-educated and had to work in really tough jobs because we came here, two kids, a couple bags, and a couple $100. And these were two people who grew up in very good circumstances, went to the best of schools, had the best of clothes. We each had a nanny, and then they had to switch everything. So my recollection is told through my parents' story. You know, the reason I got to where I've been and the reason I'm sitting here today is because I had great leaders. So I had Patty Torsney, who gave me my first job in politics. I had Anne McClellan, who was at the time the Minister of Justice, then Health, then Deputy Prime Minister, who took a chance on me. I had Judith Shamian, Dr. Judith Shamian, who was our head nurse, went over to VON, Victoria's Order of Nurses, and recruited me, gave me a VP role, my first VP role, right? Then I had Belinda Stronach, who said, hey, Farah, I'm starting a foundation. I want you to come and lead it. And I said, Belinda, I don't know anything about foundation. She said, yeah, perfect. Then I led my own foundation because she gave me my jumping board, and I created Girls 20, now called Flora. Then I had a friend call me up and say, hey, Malala Fund is looking for someone. You should apply. So all of these different things, it's sort of like, and I might also mention that all of those people were women. Every single person who opened a door for me was a woman, which should not be missed, right? That should be the norm and not the exception. I've never had a male boss except for once when I was doing a Joe job at a landscape company. He hired me on a Friday, having nothing to do with me. He had a heart attack on the Saturday, and his wife became the boss on the Sunday. So that's the only time I've had a male boss.
Can you provide an overview of the current state of youth unemployment in Canada? And what are the key statistics and trends we should be aware of?
We have a situation with young people and across the world where there are global forces that are impacting what you and I would consider normal: going to school, getting a job, getting a house, maybe getting married, maybe having kids. That has been completely turned upside down. First, they had the financial crisis, which many banks will tell you, many research firms will tell you that the majority of young people really never recovered. They're still dealing with some of the fallout from 2008. Then you have COVID and the havoc that it wreaked on people who are going to school. They didn't graduate the same. They didn't learn the same. They didn't enter the job market the same, and they're still not in the job market. Now you have a situation where employers ridiculously want for entry-level positions for these young people to have 3 years of experience and a graduate degree. This is ridiculous. So you've got a situation where you've got global forces, you know, fake not meaningful enough, you know, barriers to entry. That's what they are. They're barriers to entry. So we know that globally, fewer and fewer young people are getting a job coming out of school because there are barriers of entry that don't allow them to get the job. Mm-hmm. We know that somewhere upwards of 25% of young people feel that the school that they went to did not prepare them for the job they're looking for. That's enormous. We know that employers, I would say 9 out of 10 employers, based on the research we've done, want young people to have soft skills, but that's not what they're learning. So we have what I would call a perfect storm in terms of young people want jobs. We have a labor shortage, and we have a skills mismatch, and something's got to give.
Yeah, wow. So everything is just out of sorts. We need somebody to make all the connections for us. That's
where Princess Trust Canada comes in, right? So I think there's a challenge here to reinvent the way that we think about what a great job is. That's number one. Number two, I think that when we think about opportunities that exist, I go back to that false barrier that are put in front of young people. You must have this, you must have that, you must have this. You can't get all that by the time you're 23. And if you're not starting when you're 23 or 22, when you've graduated from whatever you're doing or you've decided not to go to school? What are you supposed to do? Wait till you're 35? So like we really have to give ourselves a collective head shake. We need young people to offset three things. One, we cannot have them not be part of a community because that leads to depression. It leads to anxiety. It leads to people checking out from being a part of community. It probably leads to some sort of health issue other than mental health, physical health, isolation. All of these things come because you need to have a sense of belonging. And I'm not saying that work is the only way to get a belonging, but it's a pretty big damn part. So that's one thing, right? Is we have to open the door to possibility because we need young people to be part of the game. The second part is we have a lot of people who are going to retire soon. Well, who the hell is going to come in to replace them if we don't give them a shot? Do we expect they're just going to come in and take the role of somebody who's now retiring and wow, they know everything? Well, shame on us again, because that's not how the real world works. So that's the second part. The third part, and this is something that is going to shake us to our core competitively in Canada. If we don't have young people help us with our labor shortage, so forget about the knowledge transfer, forget about the belonging, just competitively, if we don't have young people, we stand to lose trillions of dollars in competitiveness if we don't have young people working. Trillions of dollars. A country like Canada, the size that we are, our dependencies, we cannot afford not to have young people working.
Are you seeing for any challenges that top the list more than others when you see young Canadians trying to enter the job market? Like you've highlighted a few already, but what comes to the top of the list? Is it skills mismatch, lack of experience, other barriers to entry? What do you commonly see?
Yeah, I mean, sitting from where I'm sitting right now and having five other colleagues at other Princess Trusts, we're one of six around the world, we're all seeing the same thing. We're all seeing that there are three major things that are holding people back. It's the lack of experience because they can't get their foot in the door. It is the skills mismatch, meaning you want somebody to have all these skills, but we're not teaching them in school. So what, they're just going to get out of bed one day and they know how to negotiate and how to communicate and how to deal with stress and all these things that we call soft skills, which we probably shouldn't call them soft skills because right there we put a negative right connotation on them. And then the last thing we're seeing is that there is this inability, I think, to take a chance on young people. Perhaps it's because I'm surrounded by them, that I see the ideation and the creativity. I also have my moments of frustration because not everyone can be a social media superstar. Not everyone can be a, what are we calling them now? A social media...
Influencers?
Influencer. So we have to make sure that the expectations that we tell young people are actually reachable, right? And we have to prepare that path. I want people to dream big. I want young people to say, if I want to be an astronaut, I'm going to be a bloody astronaut. So we want them to have ambition. We want them to have goals. Well, then we have to create the pathways.
I totally agree with you. And with all the remote work happening today, I just ask myself, how do young people go from, say, graduating university to a job full time and not be working side by side their coworkers? Like, I think there's a disconnect there that we're underplaying.
You know, Susan, this has probably been the biggest decision as a leader that I've had since taking this role. Coming out of COVID, this organization went from back to the office for one day for many, many months. And then we went to 2 days. And recently I've announced that I'd like us all to go to three. And there are reasons I'm doing it. I'm not making any friends. I could tell you that. I'm not going to win any popularity contests. I'm pretty sure there's not going to be a big presence under the tree for me. But here's what motivates me. We have young people who have never worked in an office before, and we have young people who have not been in an office for a long time. How are we going to expect them to grow post-COVID if they don't have the experience, if they don't know how to connect, they don't know how to water cooler talk, if they don't know how to on the fly come up with ideas, if they don't know how to negotiate and sit in tough meetings and, you know, think their way out of it, if they can't have collaboration, they go for drinks after work or they go for a walk, or guess what? You both like Spanish music. I don't know. We need to connect. And the best way, doesn't mean you can't do it virtually, the best way is sitting side by side, dealing with the same thing at the same time and working through a problem. And so I'm not going to make any friends, but we're going to go to 3 days. And I hope, I really hope that the younger members of the team, first-time workers, and the ones who've been in the workforce for a long time will see, will remember, will recall the magic that comes from being in person. Do I want to drag my butt to the office 5 days a week in the middle of a winter storm? I don't. If I had to and I knew it made a difference, I would. Am I going to go to 5 days? Likely not. But do I think 3 days where you have to come in and you dress a certain way and you present a certain way and you come in on time and you collaborate? I don't know. I don't think there's no amount of education you can get that replaces that.
On that point, there's a, you know, 1 in 3 young Canadians aged 18 to 34 are not confident that they will have a fulfilling career or will always be able to get a job. What advice do you have for employers in terms of their role in hiring and skilling up the talent?
I think every employer, and when I say every employer, I mean private sector, I mean government, and I mean social profits like us, need to create space for young people. It's actually not that hard. Everybody has entry-level positions. Everyone started somewhere. We have to do our part. That is my one piece of advice. If we can, I'll give you a very real example. About 2 months ago, I think it was, we advertised and we said, look, we tell people all the time, false barriers. So we're going to advertise. No experience necessary. No educational requirement. Equity deserving, not in employment, education, or training. And we put it out. We put it on LinkedIn. We post it all over the place. We have ended up with this young woman in our office who is crackerjacks. Oh my God, she's smart. She's connected. She speaks up. Yeah, she's warming up, right? But I am seeing something in her that I may not have seen with somebody who had a graduate degree and 4 years of experience, because she's leading in her own way. We as leaders have to, like, not just create the space in our organizations, but you have to create the space right there beside you. Like, you have to model behavior, right? I have this thing where I don't lead every meeting. Like, if I'm there, I'm not always the chair, because you're not creating space, right? So there are little things that we can do where other people get to practice their voice and practice their leadership capacities and contributions. So I think it's important that we do that as well. It's the small things and it's the big things. So I think all of us need to think, okay, how do we create entry-level positions? Maybe it's just one, maybe it's two, maybe it's 10. You will do what you can do, but for the love of God, do something. I think you model what you want to get back. So I don't describe myself, and for your viewers, you can put up a picture of me, but I don't describe myself as not white, not male, and not tall. So I don't describe the sector that I work in as not for profit. So I think if you want leaders to get into a particular sector, call it something positive. I don't describe us as a not-for-profit. I consider us a social profit because that's what we do. We provide a social profit. So when it comes to building leaders, to making sure that this sector has the right leaders, let's change the language. Let's make the language that we use attractive to people who want to get it. I'm not going to go to something that's not for something. That's ridiculous. If I say to a young person, have you ever decided, you know, have you ever thought about working for a social profit? Tell me more. It doesn't mean you don't get this, you don't get that. It's not this. It's not, doesn't pay well. It doesn't this, it doesn't that. So I think we need to change the way we talk about different sectors as well. Anyway, social sidebar.
Justice. It's an important point though. Social justice makes it sound like you're moving towards something. And that is such a better term than nonprofit. I love that you mentioned that.
And social profit is a very real thing. Like, we do put out a profit. If you think about how big this sector is, how many jobs it provides, it's how much it offsets from the economy. Like, it's no joke, right? Mm-hmm. That's the only no I'm going to use. It's no joke.
Our last question is a call to action for our listeners. If you were to suggest to them how they can stay informed about some of the issues you've raised today around youth unemployment and how they can support and address this, whether it's an employer, you know, whoever it is that's listening, what do you suggest?
Go visit princesstrust.ca. You're going to learn about our programs. You're going to be inspired by the youth that we've been serving and those who are helping to build this country. You're going to look at it, and I hope you're going to take a long look at yourselves and say, what can I do? And if that doesn't help, then you can email me, farah.mohammed@princesstrust.ca, And I can set you straight. I can tell you statistic after statistic. I can tell you story after story, but I could, at the end of the day, help you understand why this is your challenge and opportunity. It's not a problem. It's an opportunity. It's a challenge. And it's one that's absolutely necessary for all of us.
Thank you so much to Farah Muhammad for being here today. This concludes our podcast. And I just want to say to you guys, thank you for investing in yourself. And not only that, this may have been what you just needed today to give you that little boost. Maybe you're having a rough time. Maybe you're in the car driving to work. But I'm glad that this could be that little push to give you a little extra oomph in your day. Maybe it's like your coffee for the day. But hey, if you know somebody that might need this little push, that boost of inspired leadership that especially came from Farah Muhammad today, please feel free to share it. Share it with anyone, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build leaders for tomorrow. Inspire leaders for tomorrow. The best way to do that